This is Beverly Casey, and as you heard, the conference may be recorded. Today we're going to talk about the Preliminary Assessment Transfer Template, commonly known as PAT. I call this presentation the Basic PAT Training, so you guys are going to learn a little bit about how to complete a Preliminary Assessment Template. Briefly, I would love to turn this over to C.B. Alonzo. He is our Chief Leader for Multifamily Housing Preservation and Direct Loan. You guys should be familiar with him by now. Also, I want to do just a quick housekeeping. There's a couple of things that you guys need to be aware of that are logged on to the webinar. We did send this PowerPoint out by email, so I'm sure we have a lot of callers on the phone that are using their computers to view the PowerPoint, and that's perfectly fine. I'll guide us through as we change slides so you don't have to actually join the webinar. On the webinar itself, there's a button at the top that says Content. If you click on that Content, you will begin to share your desktop with the group, so please do not click that button. There is a Q&A button. You're welcome to click that button and type any questions that you may have. At the end of the presentation, we will, of course, open the lines up, and we'll entertain questions from the group and any comments that you guys have. Now I'll turn it over to CB. We're going to have to unmute his line, Tim, if you're on.
Beautiful. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is C.B. Alonzo, and I am the director of the Rural Development Multifamily Housing Preservation Division. And on behalf of Brian Hooper and myself, I welcome you to this webinar. This is a webinar on the Preliminary Assessment Tool, also known as the PAT, for industry users. So if you dial in for something else, guess it's time to drop off. The PAT is a product of several folks, both internal and external, that includes several of you listening today. It is what I like to consider a living document, and your comments and input are always welcome. With that, I will hand it back up to Bev, and I hope you enjoy this presentation.
All right. Thank you, CB. I appreciate that. And as CB mentioned, this has been a collaborative effort. I think you guys on the phone, I'm sure there's some that have had an opportunity to hear us talk about the PAT before and probably have had a lot of input. During the releases of PAT, which actually started back last fall, we were gathering comment from the industry and also comments from our own staff. We had a very collaborative team that worked on this template, and I just want to give my appreciation for those efforts. I'm going to turn to slide one on the presentation, hopefully. So what is the PAT? It's a preliminary assessment template that's taken on that acronym that we commonly call PAT. And it's actually just an Excel spreadsheet. And it's in a template form that works best in Excel versions higher than 2002. And it was developed by RD agency staff. And as I said, it was a very collaborative effort. And it's as an underwriting tool for transfers. So I've had some questions about this spreadsheet and whether or not it works on Mac computers. Fortunately, I'm not privy to a Mac computer, so I've never even tried it on a Mac. But it is a Microsoft Excel spreadsheet, and it will work on versions that are prior to 2002 as far as the Excel. You'll notice some of the differences on those versions. That conditional formatting takes on a different view. So instead of a round circle, you may get instead of a green round circle, you'll get a 1, and you may see a 2 rather than a yellow round circle. So just be aware of that if you do have some older versions of Excel out there, that it still works. It's just you'll have to recognize that the conditional formatting, the flashy little colors, may not be there for you. So how did you get your hands on this, Pat? It's there for the applicants and the borrowers or the agency staff on our public website. And I've included those links here on our presentation today, so you guys can access this presentation from the email that was sent out and click directly on those links, and it will take you to our standard USDA site. It talks about our programs and specifically multifamily housing. There's a tab on that sheet that says Forms and Information, and that's where you'll find it. If you have any direct questions as far as the PAT, you'll find my email is embedded on in the PAT when you hover over the file name, and it's beverly.casey@wdc.usca.gov. So if you have any trouble downloading the PAT, you run into some issues with the PAT that you want to contact me directly, you're welcome to do that. So how is the PAT used? It's used for transfers. And transfers that may have applied under the NPR program. And of course, that's our Multifamily Preservation Revitalization NOFA. So with this PAT, what we've incorporated the agency policies and thresholds that were a part of our business process improvement. So we had a group of agency staff as well as involvement from the industry where we looked at the transfer process and how we could improve it. And part of that was a tool that could enable our customers to have a predictable and repeatable process so that they could understand how the agency looks at their transactions. So that's the purpose of the PAT, so that we could incorporate those policies. And we wanted to establish thresholds that were clear, that were also in line with what the standard industry uses, or more in line. So, of course, this can be used by our customers, and is situation specific for all types of transfer. So, depending on your particular transaction, you can structure that based upon whatever sources of financing you may have coming into that deal. You can structure your reserve deposits as you need to fit that particular transaction and so on. But just to be mindful that careful analysis is required by all parties, and just because you use this tool, it does not constitute approval, and it doesn't replace the application requirements. Now, I'm moving to slide 5. Who uses the PAT? Applicants and developers and the agency staff. So the customers can use that to structure their transactions to best achieve the agency's thresholds, and they can document any mitigating measures if they need to. The agency understands that not all transactions will fit into a perfect scenario. There are always particulars to our portfolio that may need to document. And it's still a very good transaction that should move forward. So that there's the ability for you to do that and explain why a particular threshold wasn't met. For the agency staff, we'll use this to assess the transaction against our thresholds and to document approval conditions for compliance with the handbook. So this essentially replaces the old underwriting template that we had actually been using for well over 10 years. So this is kind of a step forward for us because we had that old template that had not evolved with the changes of the industry. Moving to slide 6, when is the PAT used? It's used by applicants during their initial consultation. Our present handbook requires that the applicant contact the agency whenever they're considering the transfer and they're looking to obtain the agency's letter of support for filing applications with other lenders. So this will enable the dialogue to start, essentially. Not knowing the specifics of the transaction, you may generally know, if you're applying for credits, what those thresholds are, and how you can structure that transaction and what you anticipate you will be providing to the agency so that that letter of support gives us a good idea as to what the plans are. It's also updated during the application stage. So once you've finalized your applications and you're ready to move forward with your RD transfer application, you would update the PAT to show your actual funding sources and actual uses of funds. And then the agency will use that for their final underwriting. There's an agency review portal that's also embedded in the template. So it's not a separate template for the agency's underwriting. We'll all be using the same template and singing off the same sheet of music, so to speak. So using the template, this is a splash screen, and it does take a second or two to load depending on the speed of your computer. But as soon as you open the template, you're going to see the splash screen appear if you have macros enabled. And the reason I say that is the template has macros that are embedded throughout, and in order for it to function, you must have those enabled. I've got some red font here at the bottom of the screen, and it says you must have the macros enabled for the spreadsheet to work properly, and from Excel to enable the macros, click File, Options, Trust Center, and Trust Center Settings. You should check with your IT staff or your IT professional about the appropriate Trust Center settings for your computer, but certainly enable the one for this one because it's nothing malicious at all about the spreadsheet. So where do I start when completing the template? So as we're going through the next few slides, I've kind of organized this in a manner as if you were on the template itself and what you would see. Across the top, you've noticed that I have some color tabs that say message board about this template instructions, and then some others that are pale yellow. So I've kind of guided you by those colors because that's the way you step through the template. First, read that message board. That's the red tab. That's where you're going to find information that Brian or CB may have just released to tell you something new about the template, about the program in general, about this template. That's a very important page for you as you're beginning to structure your transaction. Talks about the agency thresholds and each one of those that's embedded in the formulas of the template. And to the right of those thresholds is also a revision log. So you'll see as the template is being enhanced, what things have been added and what things have been changed. So as you're making those recommendations that CB is encouraging you to do, you'll see how those were incorporated into the template in future releases. We do intend to keep the template updated and current. And with that, for instance, when LIHTC rents change, when the HUD fair market rents change, when things need to be enhanced or additional improvements that we're hoping to make as we move forward with the template. We do want to have a structured release so that the agency staff and industry can anticipate when those will happen. And so right now we're gathering those comments, and any major release will happen again probably around December. So, but if there's some things that we need to tweak in the meantime, certainly that can be done. And anytime you go to the website, you will always have the current version of the template by clicking those links that I showed you a while ago. On the Instructions tab, there's some information there that has the macro buttons that show you how to upload information into the template from other spreadsheets, such as your CNA. Some budget history that you can get, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And then the pale yellow colored cells and the pale yellow colored tabs, those are particular because that's where you enter information. So any cell that is that shade of pale yellow is where you need to type so you can understand how to fill it out. Moving through to the next tab, the Instructions tab. This is what the tab looks like. It's just very straightforward. It tells on item number one, how does the agency get this FIN 1700 report? You're going to hear some more about that as we talk through this presentation. But essentially, that's the audited financial numbers and the historical records of that property for the last 3 years, as well as the approved agency budgets. So as you're looking at setting your operating expenses, you can get a good feel for how this property has operated in the past and how you should set your operating expenses into the future. So we encourage you to, of course, use that report if you have the proper release. And there's a little blurb on there about the buyer and seller mutually agreeing to release this information. So you can use that particular language as you contact the RD staff to get the report. And then item number one shows them exactly how to pull that report for you. But most importantly, it must be in Excel so that we can incorporate it into the template. So once you get that particular report and you've saved it to your computer, you can then use the button that says Project A to upload the template, to upload the FIN 1700 report. So once you click that particular button, Project A, under number two, you would navigate to the file that you saved. You notice there are Project B, C, D, E, and F. Those are there if you had a consolidation. So if you had multiple properties that you were consolidating in this transaction that would be operated as one property into the future. Same thing with the CNA. The CNA currently is a template that's also a spreadsheet, and that spreadsheet can be uploaded so that you can size your reserve deposits into the future and cover the CNA needs over the 20-year term. That too will accept up to six different CNAs. I've had some questions about that on consolidations. If folks have asked, if I already have a CNA that's consolidated, what do I do? Do I have to tell my CNA provider to unconsolidate it? Certainly not. Just use the button for Project A, and it'll work just fine for you. And then, of course, item number four is telling you to go through those yellow cells and complete all of those throughout the template. Look for a couple of drop-down boxes on your rents and operations page, and we'll talk a little bit more about that here in just a few moments. And to always save your template with macro enabled, and that extension is XLSM. So if you'll see a warning when you get ready to save, and it's going to say if you save it without macros enabled, they will be disabled. So if that happens to you, you accidentally save without the macros enabled, I can add those back for you if you've done a lot of work on your template. But to avoid that, always save with the XLSM in the extension. So just a little bit more about, this is a highlight of some different paragraphs that you see on the instructions page. And again, this is kind of our disclaimer. That, of course, there are different scenarios for structuring transactions. There are so many, it's not possible that we could have developed a tool that could encompass every single type of transaction, but it's certainly flexible enough that you can use this template and then apply good judgment and the regulations to assure that it meets the needs of the property. So careful analysis of the results is necessary, and submission of the tool to the agency does not constitute approval, even if you get all green threshold items. And of course, this is the bullet about the buyer and seller mutually agreeing for the exchange of information. So you can send that particular paragraph similar to that and sign by both parties to the agency and obtain information from the agency's file, such as that FIN 1700 report, perhaps the unpaid balances on the agency loans, the rates and terms, and any information that you would find relevant, such as maybe the reserve withdrawal history, so you can see any major repairs that have been done in the most recent history. Instructions page, and that's the purple tab again that we're talking about, and this is just a larger picture of what that FIN 1700 report looks like as the staff is pulling that report. And I've indicated here to make sure you get that in Excel, so that drop-down button needs to say Excel. Now, a few words about that. I'm on slide 12. instructions, a few words about the MIFAS FIN 1700 report. Separate reports for each project. So if you were to have a consolidation, then you would need to obtain a separate report for each one, but the template will merge those together for you and do the averaging. It must be saved in Excel format, and the customer, this is important. This is something the customers asked for at some of the versions that we had out before. You don't have to use the FIN 1700 report. The customer can type data into the template. So if you're kind of looking at a possible scenario, but you're not really ready to present it to the agency or move forward with it, you can use this template to do what-if scenarios and type in your own budget and your own actuals. And you'll see on the rents and operations page what I'm referring to. So it works with or without it. I'm on slide 13. This is also from the instructions page, and this is just a reminder that you must have the macros enabled for these nifty little buttons to work. So if you click this button and you don't have macros enabled, it actually will not work. But also, speaking on consolidations, always check with the agency staff regarding the consolidation of properties and discuss that in advance. Because there are certain things that they will want to ask you about before you proceed too far along with that. I think we've talked enough about how to get your CNAs in there. It's very self-explanatory. You just click Project A and it'll pull it right in for you, and Project B and so on. The next tab you'll notice is yellow, and it's a general information tab. On the general information tab, and we're on slide number 15, this is what that particular sheet looks like. And there's a couple of things that I want to mention that is not self-explanatory, perhaps. Each one of the white labels describe what goes in the yellow cell right beside it. For instance, management agent, that's pretty obvious that that's going to be alpha or characters. But if you're on a cell like original monthly payment, don't put NA, don't put a question mark, always put numbers. So if it's obvious that we're looking for a numeric answer, please leave it blank if it doesn't apply, or type in a number. That Excel's not very happy whenever you try to work a formula that doesn't have a number in it. If you see something that's not right in the template, go back and look at your entries, and that might explain what's happened. Another thing to point out on this page, the 538 annual fee, that is on the right-hand bottom corner of your general information first section heading, and that's one of the entries that you would probably include or normally include in your expenses of the project. And currently we're asking, I'll show you when we get to the budget or the rents and operations, where to enter that number. But in order to remove that fee from the trending, because we certainly don't want to escalate that fee over the term, I need you to enter your annual fee for that first year on the general information tab. On the reserve balance, if you're projecting that balance into the future, say that on 12/31 from that audited financial report that you got from the agency, it showed a certain balance in the reserve account, but there's been some withdrawals and probably some deposits since that time. Please put in the actual balance on that reserve account and the as of date it applies to. And in the comment fields below, there's some areas where you can type information about the transaction, which you'll see in just a minute. Describe how you arrived at that particular reserve balance. There's a button called Click to Add Consolidation Property Information, and you'll see that on the right-hand corner of your General Information tab. Currently, the macro to print is looking for that sheet. So the print to PDF file, which is in the center of this page, is looking to have that sheet open. So if you need to print your template, please click that Add Consolidation button just to unhide that page. But that is used if you're doing more than one property, and it gives you the ability to describe the specifics of each one of those transactions if it's more than one property in this particular deal that's being consolidated. Going to slide number 16. This is just a little bit about that consolidation detail. You'll see here at the very top of that particular page, you have the ability to enter up to 6 different property names. And once you enter that property number 1, that's going to trigger something to happen into the template that will show you a different report on the dashboard. So keep in mind that that entry there is what will change one of the reports that talks about seller's equity. And the reason we have that separate for consolidation is there may be properties that are being consolidated that are not currently owned by the same entity, and there are separate sales contracts and separate appraisals that need to be distinctly identified. And this will allow you to do that. In the second yellow column that says property number 1 through 6, there you would need to enter, for instance, if your first property was called the Oaks Apartments and the Oaks had 2 loans, you would enter number 1 and then loan number 1 and the information relating to loan number 1. Then the next row, you would enter property number 1, loan number 2, and the information for loan number 2. So that allows the spreadsheet to sum up all the loans for the Oaks Apartments because you've identified that as property number 1. So keep that in mind when you're filling out this top part. If you have multiple loans for each one of those properties, identify which property number those loans apply to. Once you're done, there's a button that says click when complete to update the general info tab and the comparable CRCU rents. So this button will take all of the information that you just entered and move it to where it needs to go in the template automatically. Keep in mind, if you come back and later make changes, you just hit this button again, it'll re-update for you. Going to slide number 17. Consolidation detail, this is the bottom half of that very same page. And here you can enter information as it relates to the specific values of the properties, their current rent structures, their current reserve balances that are property specific. And you'll see the property names will come down from above. And property 1, 2, 3, and 4 will be summed up for all of their loans, etc., from above. But remember to complete all of the blank, all of the yellow cells for each property. Moving to slide number 18. This goes back to the general information tab, and the reason I put those 2 slides in between is because those 2 pages interact with each other. So if you do have a consolidation and you update that consolidation page, all of that information will pre-fill this bottom half of the screen. It's not necessary for if you have a singular property and you don't have all of these details as you're doing your preliminary assessment. Say you're at the consultation stage, you haven't really finalized that transaction. The agency can fill this information in for you later. There's also some areas for you to give narratives to describe certain things about that particular transaction so that the agency can get familiar with the particulars of your deal. Moving to slide 19, sources and uses, and this is the second yellow tab. And on the sources and uses, I want to back up one slide, 2 slides. I'm going back to the general info slide, and the reason I want to make a point for you guys so that we don't misstep on something. if you have, if you're following along with a copy of the presentation, flip back to slide number 15. On the general info tab, there's something very important I need to identify for you guys. There's a field that says unpaid RD loans, obligated prior to 10/1/91, yes or no. That's a very important answer as it relates to pre-credit reform and post-credit reform loans, and those are primarily particular to NPR or their preservation transactions. If it is obligated, or if the loans have been obligated prior to 10/1/91, they could be eligible for deferral. So clicking that yes or no answer has a direct result to the sources and uses of your template, because it will automatically divide up which loans could be eligible for deferral and which loans may not be eligible for deferral. So we're going to move forward again to slide number 19. And this relates to this information on the top of the slide. Assume existing RD 515 loans, pre-credit reform. That yes answer and no answer drives those dollars. So those will automatically pull in for you based upon your yes and no answer. And then on your rents and operations page, if you do have an NPR, the debt service would be removed once you use that NPR feature. Sources of funding. Here we have one line that could be used for 538 loans, and then any other lenders that you may, or any different types of lenders that you may have. There's a button that you can click to say if they're non-amortizing loans. If you do make that selection, it will remove the debt service from the calculation. Reserve funds used for rehab, reserve funds used for stellar. I make note of that because those entries will impact this little box here. You'll see how that changes your reserve balance based on your entry from the general information tab. If you have any withdrawals or any upfront deposits that are anticipated from your sources and uses, it will show you how your reserve balance is changing based on your entry. Of course, the tax credits are there if your transaction includes those, and any other types of sources of funds. So like we said before, this can be project specific and pretty much can tailor any type of transaction as far as those sources. So on to slide 20. I've divided this up into two sections. And when you're looking at your template, it's all just one sheet, sources and uses. But here I've distinctly divided them. So to draw attention to the entity and syndication side of the sources and those that are eligible for RD financing. You're going to find those answers are important. While this looks similar to what you may have filled out or may have seen other tax credit applications look in the past, you need to be very careful in how you make those entries, that you properly identify any expenses that are already eligible for financing and those that are not. So we've given you pretty well the categories and the typical responses, and then the same thing for the entity and syndication, those that could be eligible for the 538 program but not normally eligible for 515. And of course, with the thresholds, you'll see why that's important that you get those answers filled in the appropriate spots. Payment for seller's equity, that's an entry that's on line 56. So that would be your sales contract, include anything that is going to the seller and also any excess reserve funds being transferred to the seller. The reserve sizing, I'm going to slide 21. This is very similar to the old underwriting template on the CAP needs page. We've named this a little bit, call it reserve sizing. There's only a few yellow fields on this particular sheet. And the reason is, once you've brought in your CNA, it'll pre-fill for you, so you don't have to type it in. There's three different distinct groupings on this page, and let's talk about how they're grouped and why. The first grouping is what I'm calling the raw data uploaded from the CNA. So this is your data that came in based off the CNA. If there was some underwritten schedule changes, say to made by the underwriter, in order to allow the funding to be more even or to provide for deposits that were more affordable for the property, those would show in red. So I've pulled some numbers in and made changes just so you could see how those changes are displayed in red. And then your last section relates to how you're sizing that reserve to be funded over the term. So anytime you're a negative balance, it's going to show low. So long as it's positive for any given year, then your criteria for the threshold would have been met for funding the CNA over the 20-year term. And then there's also a display to show the lender's threshold. So if they had a particular requirement per unit, you could enter that as well. Gap required for insurance deductible. That's specific for property that may have elected a higher insurance deductible than RD would typically allow. And, of course, that's okay, but we need to have funds set aside to meet that deductible. So that's what that's for whenever there's an insurance deductible being held in the reserve to meet a higher deductible than typical for a transaction. The reserve is trending as it comes in at 3% per year for deposits. That can be changed. And if you do change that, just document why you feel it's needed. Also, the interest is at 1%, and that can also be changed. The other yellow entry here is just the validation. 30 is going to pull in this example, from the CNA itself, so that you can just make sure by your entry, is that correct? So you're kind of validating, yes, that is the number of units in the property, and it does match the CNA. Rents and operations. I'm on slide 22. This particular page is a little bit different than what we've used in the past. And the difference allows for a view of the particular targeted market if it's a tax credit transaction. And the first thing that you'll notice is the ability to pull in those tax credit rates from any particular location in the country. So you would be able to use a drop-down box and select the particular county or area for your property and display the gross tax credit rents from 50 and 60%. There are also user-entered fields, and those on this particular screen are showing empty. But if you had a 30% AMI, you would enter your 30% AMI, and then the user entered 1, 2, 3, and 4 bedrooms for that particular AMI or level of targeted market based off your tax credit application. There are 4 user-entered different AMIs. So if you had a transaction where your tax credit application was showing those, you could enter them yourself. Now, the utility allowances for the 1, 2, 3, and 4, that's also a user-entered field. So you would enter the proposed utility allowances. You'll notice on the general info page, there is an entry for utilities, but that's the current utility allowance. And this would allow you to change that if there were some energy measures that you could support a change in the utility, so you could enter those there. That would produce your net LIHTC rents. Underneath, there are yellow boxes for each type of AMI. So in this example, we have 34 one-bedroom units at 60% and 8 two-bedroom units at 60%. So none were selected for the 50%. But if you had 60 units and and 15 or whatever, you would enter that number of units for each AMI. That would sum up below and provide you with the ability to enter your CRCU for each bedroom type. There's also an addition to this version of the template that allows you to show if to select the number. Let's say that number three, this three-bedroom unit, I wanted to change to a two. I could do that. The unit type pulls in from my general information page, and I may have typed two-bedroom townhouse, and it had a different rent level. So if I entered, selected a two-bedroom twice, I then would see the two-bedroom LIHTC rates twice. So that gives you the ability for four different levels to show different types of combinations of units. Continuing on to the rents and operations page, this is the second half of that particular page. Like I said before, the FIN 1700 will pull in your current budget, which in this case would probably be 2015, and also the actual, the average of those. And, excuse me, like I said before, if you had a consolidation, it would average those up for you. It would also look to see how many years of actuals that we had in that particular report and average those for you. Like this time of the year, we have three because the 2014 year in reports are now displaying in the system. So it would say average last 3 years there instead of two. The proposed budget, that's user entered. So from your selection on the rents above, you'll see your rental income, and then you would begin to compare your entries to the actual as well as the current budget. Notice on this, on the right-hand side of the screen, and again, I'm on slide 23, you'll see where you can select the state. This brings in the state's average, and that's just for every apartment community in that particular state that RD has financed and has reported their actuals. That will display the state average by subtotal. There's also a new feature here that says comments required if subtotals are highlighted. This gray bar will turn red, and that red is displayed if there is a variance of 10% in the particular subtotal. And if that 10% up or down is shown, it will turn the bar red, and then you will need to include comments to explain why it's needed to change the proposed budget from the most recent actuals over 10% or less than 10%. And it may be a perfectly good reason for that. For instance, if you have real estate taxes that's going to a nonprofit, so of course real estate taxes are going to recognize a significant reduction or maybe even zero, you would need, that would be a perfectly good explanation to show why there's a 10% change. So just because that's red doesn't mean that it's not acceptable to the agency. It just means you need to explain it. Going to slide 24, and this is important. Save your work. Prevent your template from not functioning properly. Saving incorrectly is a common error, and I mentioned this before, but here I emphasize exactly what I'm talking about and exactly what you would see if you're using Microsoft Excel. You're going to need to change the type to an XLSM. This is incorrect, Excel workbook, and this is correct, an Excel macro-enabled workbook. With that selection, it will automatically save it to an XLSM. Going to slide 25, this is the dashboard report. And here I'm going to just briefly talk about the different types of things that you can see on the dashboard report and which ones you may find what, just interesting, or which ones would alert you to an issue and how to identify what that might be. Again, all of these reports are based off of the entries that you entered into the template in any of those yellow cells. So if you see something that doesn't appear quite right to you, first go back to those entries and find out, you know, if there's an omission, if there's something that you failed to enter, or if there's something that maybe wasn't entered correctly, like I said before, using a character in a number field. But here's a chart at the top that just tells you a little bit about the financing structure and a little bit about the proposed cost involved with that transaction. The next chart underneath, the one that says operating expenses per unit, I particularly like that chart because it displays your underwritten, which is the green bar, in relation to the three-year historical average, the current budget, as well as the state's average. So you can kind of see how your particular transaction stacks up against all of those things. And then there's a chart about rent change comparison. How much are we going up on the rents per unit, what kind of percent change, etc. The next one is seller's equity. And I mentioned before, if you had a consolidation, this chart will look different. It will change based off of your multiple property that you may have had into that particular deal. But this is one that displays for a single property. And in this example, you'll see, and I put this here on purpose, the seller's equity allowed is a negative number. So that should alert you that there's an issue. But the seller's equity that was entered was $48,000. So there's some messages that are displayed here that no seller's equity was allowed, and that we need to look at to verify the exit incentive. So in this one, it says that the thresholds weren't met. So this is an issue that we would need to look at within the template. Operating expense comparisons, this shows you those changes that we talked about and when you would need to identify a particular subtotal's change that's 10%. This is just a chart that explains the tenant impact, and one of the threshold items is tenant protection. And this would show you the amount that number one, that RA would change per year as well, and the number of unprotected tenants if that applied. These are the different thresholds that are embedded in the template, and the results of those thresholds are displayed by two different things. You're going to see a green, which means that particular threshold was met, and you're going to see a yellow that shows that particular threshold was not met. To the left, there's a button that you can press to document your threshold item. So anything that is not within the threshold, you would need to explain why the transaction should still move forward and why this particular one didn't meet it. So just to get a feel for some of those possible things, vacancy loss in this one, you can see that the actual plus two was 11%. So this property has had some vacancy issues that it was underwritten at 5%, so that certainly would need to be explained. Some additional reports that you can see are I'm on slide number 26. Additional reports that you can see is the rent change calculation. You'll notice on your rents and operations page, it's always showing you how much your rent should go up or down, and this explains how that number is arrived at. Before I mentioned, looking for errors and omissions in your entries. Notice this one, security value showing zero. Well, certainly that number has been omitted. So be sure to look over these reports carefully and validate your entries for those answers so that you're getting the results that you would anticipate. I could talk a little bit. I don't know how I'm running on time and not having the mute off. I may come back after I entertain some questions. But we could talk a little bit more about how some of these calculations are working if you have some questions. But you can see that this particular one usually drives a lot of questions, and we have made some improvements to this particular chart just to try to to allow for easier explanation, I should say. The equity contribution that is driven for the RTO calculation. So you'll notice that there are three items that are considered, and those are shaded in blue. And then the lesser of or the minimum of any of those items is picked up. And of course, since we didn't enter a security value, we've got a negative number here. But in this example, and this is a good one just to show you what happens when there's a case where the property security value doesn't allow for us to recognize additional contribution going forward. You can see the minimum on as far as cash flows would provide is a 1.15 debt coverage ratio or 8,752. So of course it's showing that we would need to look at the rents and whether or not we could afford to pay that. Documentation sheet. When you click on the documentation button, which is on the left of your threshold, also if you're looking at the slide 26, that's going to move you to the documentation sheet. And that's just a way for you to write down your any threshold items that you need to document or mitigate why they did not meet them. So had somebody say it's always a good idea to type that in Word and maybe paste it in, just because Excel is not ideal for typing as far as just a general rule of thumb. And this part is for the agency review portal. So there's the ability for us to finalize the underwriting template after you have completed your application and ready to move forward with approval. This is what the CNA review portal, one of the sheets that's in there. You can see the CNA information as it relates to if there were some changes that were recommended from the underwriting perspective to size the reserve in a manner that would allow more affordable deposits. So with that, I have covered all of the slides in the presentation, and I'm ready to entertain some questions. Looks like I have one question.
Beverly, when you import the previous audits, does it also show the vacancy allowances?
Answer that is it does. It will calculate the vacancy based upon. I better make sure I understand the question because I believe I'm headed to the right answer you want. But this is what the template does. It will pull in your actuals and compare that to the budget, and it will say based upon the rents collected, your historical rent loss was X percent, and then it adds 2% to that as part of a threshold item.
Okay, that's what I was asking. Thank you.
Alrighty. Uh-huh.
So based on that information, Beverly, it's calculating a rent loss, not necessarily a vacancy.
Yep, and that's already actually I've had some suggestions on that, and it's a point that you're making that's a good one. I want to go back to the rents and operations page. That particular header, wow, what's going on? That particular header over the somebody's trying to share their content, I think. Anyway, that particular header on the rents and operations page should really show rent loss, not vacancy. And I would see that as a good suggestion for a future enhancement.
Thank you.
I'll just pull that up. But thank you for bringing that up. I think you're right. That should be changed. This is the page that she's referring to right here where it says, I don't even know if I pulled it in here. right up underneath here where it has a vacancy. You're right. Any other questions?
Hey, Beverly, it's Rex Tilley. Are we submitting, if we're doing a, let's say we're doing a portfolio transaction, are we expected to submit this assessment tool with our submission of application for each transaction?
I am so glad you asked that question, Rex, because it made me think I forgot to say something that was important. This template is not required. So to answer your question, you don't have to submit anything. It's strictly voluntary, but highly encouraged. And I say it that way because this is your opportunity to present to the agency how you structure that transaction, and so that we can view how your underwriting basically can be displayed to us. So I would certainly encourage you to complete the template, but it is not an OMB approved form, so we can't request it. Now, specific about a portfolio, if you had multiple properties that are going to be operated separately going forward, then you would need to complete one template for each property to display the operation.
Right. Just one other question. You were mentioning that the rent loss slash vacancy loss, and you said that you add 2% to that implied vacancy loss. Did I misunderstand that, or?
No, you did not. That's exactly what I said. That is one of the threshold items that you'll see on the threshold page. And just to kind of give you a little background about that particular threshold, why that is changed or why that's in there. One of the major changes that you'll see at this template is there's not a, quote, required agency cushion. Before, we did underwrite with a 5% cushion in some transactions, maybe 10%, depending on the amount of cash that was available in the general operating account. But this template and these thresholds that are embedded does not require an agency cushion. But as a means to make sure that there's some ability to capture adequate revenue if there's some unanticipated cost overruns, we have added 2% to that vacancy factor. We've also got a threshold item that you fund the general operating account up to a certain percentage, which is 20% of the GLA after taxes. So we're trying to move away from that required cushion, but still provide for adequate rents that would enable the property to sustain an unanticipated expense or an anticipated spike in vacancy.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Yes, I have a question on the part two of the RTO calculation.
Uh-huh.
There, you talked about the top a little bit on the second part where there's 1, 2, and 3, and then it says total allowed RTO for this transaction. It's pulling the 8,752. I've used the PAT for a couple different transactions, running them through, and I cannot figure out what is the method that it's pulling 1, 2, or 3.
Okay, I can explain that for you. All right. Number one, where it says net cash flow for RTO, that is actually the available cash flow from the project. So let's say that after all the expenses, there was $10,000 that was available for a return on investment. There are a couple of things that could be subtracted away from that cash. And one of those is if we didn't meet the requirement for vacancy. And so there's a chart below that kind of explains where that calculation comes from. So if you've actually put in a much lower vacancy loss than historically could be achieved to increase the cash flow for RTO, it's not going to allow that to it's going to take that into consideration. that that threshold item wasn't met. It also could subtract if you have budgeted rents that were higher than LIHTC or CRCU, whichever that minimum is. So just by raising rents above that minimum threshold amount is not going to allow you to gain the RTO. While it may be necessary for this transaction to pay for its expenses, its debt service, its operating costs, we would not recognize that as additional RTO. We would also not recognize any non-amortizing RD loans. So if you went through the NPR, it's going to increase your debt, your cash flow, because you've removed, say, a $20,000 rural development mortgage. We're not going to allow that to go to RTO. So after the cash flow is considered and any of those things removed, that's where number one comes from. Number two, okay, is the required the RTO requirement for the 1.15 debt coverage ratio. So one of the prior, just to give a little background on what number two is about, one of the prior versions of the template, we built in the 1.15 debt coverage for year one. And essentially what we were saying is we didn't want to cut the rent so tight that a lender's debt coverage ratio couldn't be met.
Wow.
And in those particular cases, we said, well, if that is built into the rent, then the return on investment should be able to be captured with that additional rent structure. And then item number three is 8% of the actual equity being brought into the transaction. So those three numbers are then compared. And if the cash flow is the greater number, then that's what you're going to see for the if number three is the greater number and the cash flow would apply for it or would pay for it, then you're going to see that answer go to total allowed RTO. But if either one of those was lower, then it's going to default to the 1.15. So essentially,
okay. So if I have
the standpoint that rents need to be there to support it, and of course the equity that's coming into the transaction. This one is really not a good example because we entered zero for the security value just to show that an omission was made.
Yeah, that all makes sense, and that's what some of my paths were coming out as, but I have one where the net cash is significantly higher than the RTO required for 1.15, and it's pulling the RTO required for 1.15. So I'll talk directly.
That's
with
probably that. Because number three is a lower number.
So if number three is, or number one or number three is lower than number two?
Yeah, so you've got to be able to support the equity. The equity contribution needs to be there first. So if the equity contribution is the first consideration, the second is going to be the rent. So you've got to have rent to support that equity contribution. But if the 1.15, if the rents have got to be raised to meet that 1.15 debt coverage ratio, then we'll allow the RTO for that, even if the other numbers are smaller.
Yeah. So it's 3-1 and then 2. That makes sense. That the second that calculation.
I'm going to rearrange that chart and put them in a different order.
Well, I think just some explanation, because there's nothing on the instructions page that talks about how this calculation. But yeah, maybe changing the order would help as well.
But then read the threshold page, because that page describes how the RTO is calculated in words.
Correct, but it doesn't talk about, well, it may talk about it, but I spent quite some time with it, and it wasn't clear for me, so I suspect it won't be clear for other people. So if you could maybe work on the chart to make it a little more clear, that would be helpful, I'm sure, to everyone.
And if you have a specific example or idea, please send me an email, because I would love to see it. Anything I can do to make it clearer.
Thanks, I will. Yeah, great.
Any other questions?
Can you talk a little bit about the training that the state offices have received and will receive to know when we can sort of lean on them to talk about this tool and who is going to be the point person, you know, which staff role or staff position at the state offices will be using the tool?
Okay. Last week, Tuesday, a week ago, we gave this very same presentation to our staff, and we probably have some staff folks on the phone now and maybe even on the webinar. This summer, we're going to give three sessions across the nation where our staff will get one-on-one face-to-face training. And part of that training will include this tool. We have disseminated, of course, this PowerPoint to our staff along with giving them the webinar. Now, as far as who in the staff should you contact, the program director, and there's a on our RD website, there's a link that shows you the staff folks so you can get their phone numbers for each particular.
Well, I know my program director. That's not the issue.
Okay. Yeah, they'll tell you.
You're so positive.
Question.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Question, Beverly.
Yeah, this
yes.
is Charles. How are you?
Good.
Look, in light of that, you know, I think what everybody needs to realize is this is a new tool, and I'm glad that people are using it. And I'm from the national office with Beverly. We work together on NPDL. I believe once we go through our summer training sessions to where we're going around and we should cover everyone in every state with training sessions this summer, the state personnel are going to become better and better at being able to work with you all, those of you who are outside of the agency, to provide advice. But I think at this time, it's all a learning curve, so it may take us a while, but I have to be like Bev. I'm very positive because I truly believe that after a while, it's going to be great, that everyone's going to be able to help. I believe the developers will be able to have an upfront idea when they put a deal together where this is going to go for them and things to be looking out for at the very beginning and not at the end, as it sometimes happens now. Thanks, Bev.
Thank you, Carlton. I appreciate you chiming in. You're always there. Got my back. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Beverly, this is Bob Yoder. I just got to make the comment that this tool will make it so much easier when you go to the state for tax credits. It will save on our next portfolio deal probably 8 months.
Wow.
Because in the past, we went in with the operating budget as it was today, and then when we got when we did the underwriting with the template, I took the template back in and changed it, and it made it so much easier. I wouldn't have had to go through the first set of garbage.
So that's very encouraging. Thank you for saying that. I we're thrilled that this is going to, and that was one of the major goals of the process improvement, was how we can streamline the process, number one, from the standpoint of the agency, but also how to make it easier and more predictable and quicker for our customers. So it's very encouraging to hear that feedback. Any other comments, questions? All right, hearing none, I believe we are ready to end our, we're in at about an hour and 15, so y'all probably have heard enough and are ready for, again, working on something else today. But if you need to contact me, you can easily get my email, beverly.casey@wdc.usca.gov. Love to hear from you. Any comments, any ideas on what you would like to see in a future release? We're ready to hear them. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks, Beverly.
Thank you, Beverly.
Thank you, Beverly. Great presentation.